So I'm going to begin my Sermon on the Mount with a story from a compilation by Elisa Davy Pierman. There were two friends. They were walking down the sidewalk of a busy, loud, crowded, noisy city. They were walking down this street during the middle of rush hour. And you know what a city is like. There are horns, there's all sort of cacophony and chaos. And one person, one of the friends, turned to her friend whom she was walking with and said, in the midst of this chaos, "I hear a cricket." "No way," said her friend. "How could you possibly hear a cricket with all of this noise? You are making that up. Besides, I've never seen a cricket in this city." That's what she said. And the woman said, "No, I really hear a cricket. I'll show you." And she bent over. She stopped for a moment, and she went to a great big cement planter across the street, and she picked up a leaf, and lo and behold, there was a little brown cricket in there. "That is amazing," said her friend. "This is utterly astonishing. You must have superhuman hearing. What is your secret?" And the friend said, "No, my hearing is the same as yours. There's no secret. I'll show you." She reached into her pocket, pulled out some loose change, and threw it on the sidewalk. Amid all the noise in the city, everyone within 30 feet turned their head to see where the sound of money was coming from. "You see, it's all a matter of what you're listening for." And that story, to me, reminds us that we see what we choose to see. We hear what we choose to hear. We give power to that which we place our focus upon. It is no stretch at all to say that money, the lack of it, the presence of it, the movement and the withholding of it, is one of the subjects which we are most likely to return our focus again and again and again. It is an issue about which we are ever ready to perceive either good news or bad, one way or another, and it is a symbol of just about everything that matters. Money is a powerful thing. We pay attention to it whether we want to or not. So often we hear the coins jingling even when we ignore the very music of the spheres. Sometimes we feel the pressure and the pain of its absence more acutely than we feel the absence of our soul's deepest yearnings, because it is a symbol of our deepest yearnings. And for some of us, it has become the sound of our aspirations, translated into a few green pieces of paper and 1,000 clicks of 1,000 different keys on the computers of the mighty and the downtrodden alike. The tinkling music of coins and computer keys, money and dreams and hopes and new beginnings being born and dying in the constant rhythm of a global marketplace. Money is a symbol of comfort, of power, of responsibility, and if one person or party holds the keys to that particular kingdom, the other person must either freely or forcibly surrender some ground sooner or later. I do a lot of work with couples who are getting married, and one of the most awkward and important conversations that I often have with them is the money talk, where I sit down and I say, "Now, have you talked about how money is controlled and where power moves in the money in your relationship?" And they look at me like, "Ugh, do we have to talk about that in front of you?" And I say, "No, you don't have to talk about it in front of me, but you have to talk about it with each other. What matters is not the particular decisions we make, but that all of us unpack the bags we carry with us into the room. Every time the subject of money comes up, we dwell there for a time in the whole mess of it, until at least the way forward is one we've actually chosen, not one our anxiety drives us toward." We pay attention to money for a whole lot of reasons. Because it represents so many things, not the least of which is freedom. Freedom. Because the absence of money, at least in the extreme, involves radical curbing of the freedom of those who yearn for it. Some years ago, In 2006, before the economic downturn, a study on human happiness was put out. It was Richard Layard's book, which was called Happiness. And in that text, he showed some evidence that in third world countries and in any environment of actual scarcity, which, by the way, is right here as much as it is overseas in some distant place, in environments of actual scarcity, the introduction of more money into the system actually does make people happier. When there's no fear of starvation, no mortal terror for one's safety, life is actually better, right? This is simple. Some of us have experienced the kind of fear that comes with real scarcity, and some of us crave for the kind of relief that might come. Some of us hope for that relief even now, because at some levels the absence of money becomes also for us an absence of freedom. It is, in those moments, a symbol of all the power that a person scraping to get by, maybe even you, does not have. Up to a certain point, money is a symbol of security, and it's a tool for finding that security. But beyond that point, when we are not starving, when we know that we have a place to stay tomorrow, money becomes a symbol not just of security, but of 10,000 different things, the most important of which is nothing less essential than who we think ourselves to be and what is important to us in this world. And I tell you what, it is a tough Sunday to preach about money and values right now. Because right now, our elected officials guided us to the brink and then narrowly avoided the first government shutdown in 15 years. And all the conversation was about how this is about money. Since many of us are federal workers, we are the very people whose lives are most impacted by the symbolic and real power of our government's money. And for the moment, the 2011 operating budget of the United States will probably go forward, but other budget battles loom, none of which promise to be particularly easy. When it comes to money, the United States government stands at an impasse, and it might be easy to say that this impasse is the result of a financial crisis. That makes sense, that there are economic factors pushing and pulling different elected officials to different positions, but I think we stand at a crisis that is different and deeper than just an economic impasse. What we stand at is the very midst of a tragic impasse of mission and vision. Money is a symbol of what we value. And right now our government and our elected leaders are having a terrible time figuring out what a government exists to do. What we lack is any sense of clarity about the purpose and primary commitments of the United States government, and the absence of that clarity creates a situation wherein money is held hostage in a proxy fight until somebody cedes ground on the deeper question of mission. Instead of a government with a unified vision for itself, a reason it exists, the best we're likely to get in this scenario are final numbers that are crunched to a decent compromise, something that keeps the ship of state afloat. And maybe that's good enough. And maybe it's not. What I do know is that it's not likely to make anybody's heart sing with inspiration and pride in the power of our democracy. As the Hitchhiker's Guide said in our reading, this planet has or had a problem, which was this. Most of the people living on it were unhappy pretty much all the time, and most solutions for this problem consisted in issues related to the movements of small green pieces of paper. And the problem remained, and the people were unhappy. Money is a symbol of the real issue. It is a stand-in for the lack of vision, the absence of unified purpose that is resting at the heart of our national discourse. Even when the budget's passed, even when the little green pieces of paper have been sifted and sorted as well as they could be, it still won't be clear what unifying purpose that transcends our partisan politics really exists. Is it the role of government to stay out of the way or to provide services? Is it to ensure the safety of the people or to ensure their well-being? We don't know. And that symbolic document, the budget, bears the weight of those unanswered questions. Money, as always, is a pawn in an ancient game of power, and nobody's really winning right now. Because the prize that we need to claim at the end is not really fundamentally more coins to jingle together, but more vision to propel us forward and more purpose to guide our feet while we run this race we cannot cease to run together. Earlier, I referenced a 2006 study of happiness in which research showed that for those who were truly in a state of desperation, the addition of money actually makes folks happier. But that isn't the end of the story. For the majority of people, and in nations like ours that are not mired in the economic desperation of the third world, for the majority of people, happiness does not seem to be directly correlated with the amount of money we have, but rather with our own ability to contribute to some overarching purpose that's bigger than us. Happiness, studies show, can be tied to purpose. And purpose is most easily achieved by being a part of something you actually believe in. Current politics, I think, can bear this out. Here we are, in the richest nation in the world, and we're so mired in the movement of these little green pieces of paper that you would think we were standing in the midst of the deluge. I heard a bit on TV the other night where some comedic pundits had a shtick of trying to put positive spins on tragic global affairs. And one of the issues that stumped these positive spin artists was the latest atrocious violence in Afghanistan, this whole business that was set off by this doofus of a Florida pastor who decided to burn the Quran. Anyway, people died because of that choice. And in this little comedic moment, the challenge was, put a positive spin on that. And in a last-ditch effort to find something positive to say about that, he said, well, makes our partisan bickering over the budget look sort of precious and quaint, doesn't it? As a nation, we are not truly living in the depths of that scarcity. We are not, like Afghanistan or Libya or Japan, barely keeping violence from overtaking us or fending off the effects of a tragedy that changes the whole scope of our history. Instead, we're fighting over where money goes and whose particular philosophical objection to what line item will win the day. As a nation, we are so lucky to have these problems, as opposed to 10,000 others. We have so much, and yet we still are not happy. And yet those little green pieces of paper are still a symbol for us of everything we don't have, when all that we really truly lack is a purpose, a vision, a shared national story that we're capable of telling together. British sculptor Henry Moore once wrote that the secret of life is to have a purpose. Something you devote your entire life to. Something to which you bring every minute of every day. And the most important thing is, it must be something you cannot ever possibly completely do. It must be something big enough and impossible enough and glorious enough to keep you interested. Something worthy enough to keep you willing. Something just impossible enough that you keep working to figure it out. And most of the purposes so big and so complicated that we can't figure them out have a way of drawing us out of ourselves and into partnership with others. A purpose that matters in the long run, one that doesn't get boring eventually, is a purpose that is not self-referential, but works for the betterment of the whole. And I tell you, I am glad I'm not a politician, because I'd be bad at it. But also, because most of what I know about moving groups of people forward toward a purpose, I have learned from this congregation, and in this moment, I would so much rather be your minister than a politician. Because here we know what we value, and we work for it. Here our budget actually does represent what we yearn for. You look at those numbers, line by line, And each and every one is a direct statement of something all of us together choose not to do without, because all of us here gathered stand behind them and work for them. In our budget, a line item for professional child care expenses is a statement that we care about who meets our babies at the door. A line item for the food pantry means that we know some of us and many of our neighbors are hungry. A corner of the budget dedicated to music means that in this place our voices sing with what we cannot say and our spirits soar with gratitude. My salary means that you value what I do, and this squeaky floor beneath our feet is built by the work of our hands and the gifts of our wallets and the time that we dedicate to keeping these precious and just a little precarious walls standing. And none of what we do here is about money. None of what we do here involves listening hungrily for the tinkle of change and ignoring the song of the cricket. Everything we do here is about our purpose to nurture one another, to heal what is broken within ourselves, and to be gracious servants of love in this world. It is simple in this way, what we do. We do what we can, not more and not less, what each of us can, because we are lucky enough to know what it is to be a part of something larger than ourselves. And for most of us, it actually does make us happier. Our money is a symbol of what we value, and we value one another. So we make contributions because our checkbooks ought to look an awful lot like a statement of our values, too. And we do what we can not because of begrudging obligation, but because it means that our lot is cast with these, our neighbors and friends. And all that we do alongside one another. Money is not the life's blood of this congregation. Money is not what we gather to receive or to promote. The life's blood of this congregation is purpose. And money only indicates our willingness to be a part of a purpose we are committed to. It is a gesture of what we value, and it translates into the power and the freedom that we might use to make our values more real in the world. Our legislators appear right now to believe that there is endless time, that there are plenty of hours and days and years for them to reach some sense of shared purpose and move us forward in some direction besides to and from the next election. But you know what? There is no other time for defining our purpose as individuals, as a congregation, and as a nation. There is no other time for defining our purpose and doing what we must do to support it other than this present moment. There is no time other than now. If we cannot speak our purpose and live our ideals now, tomorrow will not be what we dream of. There is no other time to find and support and work for and struggle with the vision and mission of our congregation than right now. For if we do not choose to align ourselves with our deepest commitments now, what we love will not shine so brightly in the future. We are really lucky. We are so lucky to be a part of a place with a purpose. A place that welcomed me and all of you in, that will welcome many, many more. A place where money is not the only sound we hear, but only a representation of the real music we make together. We are so lucky that what we do here works. And in this time of non-working systems, we stand in the middle of something precious, an institution that does what it says it's going to do. Now is the time to support what you value, not some later or more convenient season, but now. And for me, this is the place that I am so honored to further a vision that we share with the gifts I have to give. We know why we exist, for one another and with one another, and for all those who yearn for what we have found here. There is no time but now to support that purpose with all that we have and with all that we are.